Blog Talk Radio.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. African nations must continue to be vigilant against the threat of COVID-19 as some countries begin to ease lockdown restrictions amid a sharp rise in numbers of infections, the continent's UN Health Agency head said on Thursday. To date, the continent is the least affected global region by far, but Dr. Matshidiso Moeti, World Health Organization Regional Director for Africa, said that rapid increases in case numbers were now being identified. While it had taken 36 days for the continent to reach 1,000 cases, only 62 days passed before it hit the 100,000 mark, she said, at a joint World Health Organization World Economic Forum event.
Compared to 2 weeks ago, reported cases have tripled in five countries and doubled in 10 countries, noting that most countries still have fewer than 1,000 reported cases. This means that as governments ease lockdowns and other social measures, it's important that the strong public health measures are in place all over the territories, not just in the capital cities, that communities are empowered and enabled to take preventive actions, and that we continue working on strengthening health systems and delivering essential services to people.
In South Africa, the country's health minister, Dr. Zweline Mkhize, said that the situation was stable in most areas, but there were around 13 infection hotspots where additional restrictions and resources were being put in place to isolate infected people and quarantine suspected carriers. Globally, there are more than 5.5 million infections and over 350,000 deaths linked to the disease. An urgent appeal for the people of Syria has been issued by the UN Migration Agency, IOM, amid growing concerns that millions of people displaced by years of fighting are unprepared for the threat of COVID-19. The disease has compounded an already devastating crisis that has left 11 million people in need of help, IOM Director General Antonio Vitorino said at the launch of the $206 million appeal. It's hoped that donors worldwide will show solidarity to support 3 million Syrians inside and outside the country. Of the total amount, $33 million will be allocated to preventing the spread of COVID-19. The government has reported 121 confirmed COVID-19 cases to date. While no infections have been recorded in the northwest, the region saw an alarming rise in hostilities in the first 3 months of the year, and the health and safety of more than 1 million people living in tents in overcrowded, under-resourced sites remain a serious concern. To the Bay of Bengal, finally, where it's feared that up to 500 people of all ages are adrift and stranded at sea. The development follows reports last month that more than 30 Rohingya refugees died after spending 2 months aboard a smuggler's vessel attempting to enter Malaysia. The UN Migration Agency, IOM, which issued the alert, has urged countries in the region to bring all those at sea to shore. IOM's Director General Antonio Vitorino also called on them to uphold the commitments of the 2016 Bali Declaration, as well as ASEAN pledges to protect the most vulnerable, a reference to the 2015 crisis in the Bay of Bengal and Andaman Sea, where thousands of refugees and migrants in distress were denied life-saving care and support. A coordinated response to this situation, inclusive of search and rescue operations and safe disembarkation, is urgently needed to ensure that those who are still stranded at sea can be brought to safety on land, Mr. Vitorino said. The development comes 10 days after deadly cyclone Amphan barreled through the region, signaling the start of months of extremely dangerous sailing conditions. For years, the Rohingya have travelled by sea to Malaysia to find work and reunite with their families, although IOM says that their numbers have diminished in recent years. Conflict in Myanmar in mid-2017 forced around 850,000 Rohingya to flee across the border with Bangladesh, where they now live in a series of sprawling refugee camps in Cox's Bazar. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Stan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. See if you try. No hell below us. Above us. Imagine all the people
Welcome to Free Thought Radio. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and happy end of May. It hasn't been a very happy May, hitting that grim milestone of 100,000 deaths here in the United States, the terrible, brutal murder of George Floyd there in Minneapolis that everybody must condemn. But let us hope that we will be graduating to better news in June. And we do have a chock full show for you, very interesting show for you today to take your mind off some of this.
And I'm here too. I'm Dan Barker, co-president of FFRF. This is the May 28th, 2020 edition of Free Thought Radio. Once again, the great Buzz Kemper is producing this show in his recording studio, Audio for the Arts, which is in downtown Madison, while Annie Laurie and I are hosting from our Safer at Home studio about 3 miles away, which is Madison, Wisconsin, is the headquarters of the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
And Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation since 2006, broadcasting and podcasting. And FFRF, of course, does so much more. This is just sort of our weekly update on everything we do as a state church watchdog and a national association of atheists and agnostics. Over 32,000 members. If you are a member of FFRF supporting our state church litigation and work to keep religion out of government, thank you. If you're not, we would love to have you join us at FFRF.org or ask for a sample of our newspaper. The May Free Thought Today issue is just stupendous. You don't want to miss it. And we'd be glad to send you a complimentary copy. Just click the Ask for Info link at our homepage, FFRF.org.
In the second half of today's show, we're going to talk again with the author, poet, and essayist, Katha Pollitt, about the TV series on FX called Mrs. America.
Of course, this is the show that is all about Phyllis Schlafly, the Roman Catholic who derailed the Equal Rights Amendment, but it has cameos about all of the famous feminists of the era. It was a delightful show, just ended Wednesday. And Katha wrote an even more delightful column about it last week. And she's going to come on the show and actually read that column. And we're going to talk about it, other feminist issues and other free-thinking issues of the day. And Katha Pollitt, of course, is the notable columnist for The Nation, author and poet and essayist. And then we are also going to hear in this first segment from FFRF legal fellow Dante Harutunian, about a Christian cross on an Illinois public high school athletic mural that the Freedom From Religion Foundation has been able to get removed just this week. So Dante did that work, and we're going to hear more about it in a minute.
This week's the anniversary of the birthday of the British composer Edward Elgar, perhaps best known for Pomp and Circumstances, which is played at many graduations. Elgar was born June the 2nd, 1857, raised as a believing Roman Catholic, but he discarded his faith toward the end of his life. On his deathbed in 1934, Elgar told his doctor that he had no faith whatever in an afterlife. "I believe there is nothing but complete oblivion," he said. Listen for some of Elgar's music today, including Pomp and Circumstances and Nimrod from his Enigma Variations.
Edward Elgar may have faced complete oblivion, but his music lives on. And speaking of graduations, since they are not being held in person this year for obvious reasons, the Secular Student Alliance has decided to hold a virtual graduation. They asked FFRF if we would provide a brief video greeting to students around the country. Video greeting to students around the country, along with many other secular celebrities. And here is what Dan sent them.
Hi, I'm Dan Barker. I'm co-president of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. I'm a former preacher, but don't worry, I'm not going to open with a prayer. Let's give thanks where thanks is due to you who worked hard to achieve this accomplishment. Congratulations on your graduation. You are now entering the afterlife, where real learning begins. But this afterlife does not last forever. We hope you will find ways to truly enjoy life while making it meaningful in the decades ahead. Please keep in touch with FFRF as we work to keep state and church separate and to educate the public about the views of non-theists.
All graduating students everywhere. And now we have Dante, our legal fellow, on the phone with us. Welcome to Free Thought Radio.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
So you have a very good victory to report. So can you set the scene?
Sure. So last year, FFRF was contacted by a local resident in Effingham, Illinois, who reported that a group of parents had commissioned a mural that would consist solely of the American flag alongside a large Latin cross on the outside of a tunnel that leads from the local high school's main building to the football stadium. Now, normally when we get these types of reports, we simply write to the school district itself to get the inappropriate religious iconography removed. Here, there was a little bit of a complication because the mural was technically on city property, even though it was in sort of the center of the high school, and the painting
had
been approved by the
Dante?
City property. Effingham City property. So it had been approved by the city rather than by the school. However, the same basic constitutional principles still apply. We wrote to the city asking for the cross to be painted over, and last week we received word that the city had in fact done so.
Now, this did create quite an uproar, though. Wasn't there like a big march and parade and a lot of fuss and complaints about our complaint?
It did. There were protests about it. There was a city hall meeting that had a lot of people speaking up who were opposed to our request. And there was an online petition that went around on, I believe, change.org that many people signed that did not like that we wanted representation for all.
So the city responded to you, or the school of the city responded telling you that this was private speech because it was a private artist who was commissioned. You wrote a letter in January debunking that argument. What did you say to them?
Well, the Supreme Court ruled on this issue back in 2009 in a case called the Pleasant Grove case that came out of Utah. And essentially what the Supreme Court said is when the government accepts private monuments, or in this case a private mural, for display on city land, it can adopt the language or the message that's contained within the monument or the mural. So here the city accepted the mural to be painted on its own wall, and since it has the ability to control what is on that wall, the speech becomes the city's speech.
Yeah, well, so clearly, because anybody who would be seeing that would think that the city, of course, was endorsing the idea that to be a good American, you have to be a good Christian.
Yeah, and when you say anybody who sees that, the location of this mural, it's on a path that's, for the most part, used by high school students at the public high school to get from the football area to the main building in the high school. So it's targeted at public school students.
So that's really proselytizing students. It's miseducating them that in order to be a U.S. citizen, you're supposed to be a Christian.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you, Dante.
Yes, good victory.
If people want to see the before and after pictures of that mural, you can go to our website.
Well, we're about to get out a press release and get that up.
Well, the FFRF from the news on our website has some local stories in the Effingham paper where you can see the before and the after. Thank you so much for your hard work, Dante.
Congratulations, Dante. Thank you.
Happy
go ahead.
To do it.
Thank you for joining us.
Last week, on Friday, May the 22nd, President Trump made an alarming announcement about churches.
Today I'm identifying houses of worship, churches, synagogue, and mosques as essential places that provide essential services. Some governors have deemed liquor stores and abortion clinics as essential, but have left out churches and other houses of worship. It's not right. So I'm correcting this injustice and calling houses of worship essential. I call upon governors to allow our churches and places of worship to open right now. These are places that hold our society together and keep our people united. The people are demanding to go to church and synagogue, go to their mosque. Many millions of Americans embrace worship as an essential part of life. The ministers, pastors, rabbis, imams, and other faith leaders will make sure that their congregations are safe as they gather and pray. I know them well. They love their congregations. They love their people. They don't want anything bad to happen to them or to anybody else. The governors need to do the right thing and allow these very important essential places of faith to open right now for this weekend. If they don't do it, I will override the governors. In America, we need more prayer, not less.
Well, in America, we need more reason and less
superstition.
So we did respond to that. But first, let's hear what Trump then said this week during Tuesday's White House Rose Garden press conference about protecting seniors with diabetes, who, of course, are more prone to getting ill from COVID. But he was announcing a drug reduction cost price. A reporter asked Trump to clarify what he meant about churches being essential.
Mr. President, on Friday you announced that you wanted governors to reopen churches and synagogues and mosques, and you said you would overrule them if they declined to do so. Can you explain what authority you had in mind when you said that you would do that?
We need people that are going to be leading us in faith, and we're opening them up. And if I have to, I will override any governor that wants to play games. If they want to play games, that's okay, but we will win. And we have many different ways where I can override them. But we want our churches and our synagogues and our mosques, etc. We want them open. Now, there may be some areas, by the way, where the pastor or whoever may feel that it's not quite ready. But let that be the choice of the congregation and the pastor.
So we issued, of course, a statement after the long Memorial weekend on Tuesday about how Trump has once again crossed the line and once again is endangering lives. And as has been pointed out quickly after his first announcement about churches being essential and going after governors who might have shut down protective orders, Trump, as president, does not have the power to override stay-at-home orders by governors. But one thing he could do is sue. And he's already got online Attorney General William Barr, who late in April made his own shameful announcements that we've talked about on Free Thought Radio, signaling that the Justice Department is ready to support church gatherings during the pandemic. It's already sent threatening letters to several governors. But Trump here is playing to his base, which is 80% of the evangelicals and fundamentalists who voted for him in 2016. But Dan, he seems to be forgetting or noticing the irony that Trump may be endangering the health and lives of some or many of his best supporters by urging them to congregate in the midst of a pandemic. And in fact, church shutdowns have only occurred in about half the states, because of course some states never had shutdowns. But as we have pointed out last week, there have been lawsuits filed in at least 19 states by churches or churchgoers that are demanding that governors or public officials or local counties lift COVID-19 precautions. And that is, I think, shocking. So, of course, his announcement has given succor to all of these litigants and defiant pastors, including 1,200 California pastors who say they're going to open their churches this Sunday to celebrate the Pentecost. And Dan, I didn't know what that was, so you might want to tell listeners, what is the Pentecost?
Pentecost is 50 days after the resurrection, which is where the Holy Spirit came, they spoke with tongues, and they started preaching the gospel for the first time.
So it's after Easter.
Yeah.
So anyway, they're challenging Governor Gavin Newsom's executive order, and of course he's already, you know, they're all afraid. So many of these governors have already capitulated, have done things early for churches. Often when they said you couldn't go to in-services, they did say 10 or less people. They gave more provisions for churches than they did to other similarly situated public gatherings. We are also looking in Minnesota, where Lutherans and Catholics applauded Trump's order, those who are suing Governor Tim Walz for wanting to hold in-person worship. And I would point out that they're represented by the Beckett Fund. That's a Catholic ultra-conservative legal firm. And yet, a Catholic church in Houston that reopened on May 2nd had to close after five leaders tested positive for COVID-19 and another priest died. So this is, the point is that many, many, many churches and pastors do not want to reopen. And in fact, we were pleased to see the presiding prelate of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America say that no one is depriving us of our religious rights. And what is so ironic, Dan, is that Paula White, who serves as Trump's White House faith-based office person and his personal spiritual advisor, even she announced she's planning to host online-only Pentecost services this Sunday at her private at her Florida church. And even Robert Jeffries, the Dallas pastor of a prominent megachurch, has said that he's going to be reopening his church based on data, not date. So even a rebuke from this mega church pastor, essentially. So the president is wrong, and he's done something that I think is jeopardizing our public health. So coming up.
So I have a riddle before we go to the break. It's not really a riddle, but it's like a question. Next Halloween, what will be the best way to scare people?
So you'll tell us after the break.
We will tell you that after the break.
And then we're going to have some comfort music. We're going to hear a little bit about Julia Sweeney. And then we're going to talk with the wonderful columnist and essayist, Katha Pollitt from The Nation.
Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute, where no religious body seeks to impose its will, directly or indirectly, upon the general populace.
Let's restore respect for America's secular roots. Help the Freedom From Religion Foundation defend the wall of separation between state and church. Join us at FFRF.org. Freedom depends on freethinkers.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. So, Dan, you gave us a riddle or a question or a joke about what to do next Halloween.
Yes, next Halloween, the best way to scare people will be to go trick-or-treating without masks.
That's pretty funny. And that's original. Who knows?
That is.
There may be others who thought the same thing, but that's an original
riddle. They stole it from
me. So Julia Sweeney, we were talking with her recently, and she pointed out that the coronavirus is making it harder for bank robbers. And speaking of Julia Sweeney, who is the comedian, actress, former Saturday Night Live alum, playwright of Letting Go of God, we interviewed her for the last show of our season of our TV show, Free Thought Matters, that's out now on our YouTube channel and will be playing on Sunday. And we have a brief clip from that show. You went from Catholic schoolgirl to a very ardent atheist. And so in a nutshell, what happened?
Well, I just looked into it a little bit. Yeah, I don't even, now it's, you know, hard for me to imagine how anyone buys into any of it if you really look into it. I mean, there's really no historical evidence for the miracles or scientific evidence for the miracles. Like, there's just, I became educated. I just took the normal critical thinking that I would use buying a car or selecting a face cream, and I applied it to the religion that I was in.
So you can watch that show now on FFRF's YouTube channel. Look for the Free Thought Matters playlist. And it is the last show of the season, but you can all summer long look at the other shows that have run and also watch our Ask an Atheist show. Now, Iris Luella Dement is another an entertainer who has taken a second look at religion. She's a two-time Grammy-nominated singer and songwriter, born in Arkansas in a Pentecostal environment. And she's played with John Prine, Emmylou Harris. Her music's appeared in films and TV. And a version of her song, Let the Mystery Be, which expresses religious skepticism, became the musical theme for the opening credits of the HBO series The Leftovers. So I think it's a comfort song, and it's also a very philosophically interesting song. This is Iris Dement singing Let the Mystery Be.
I believe in love and I live my life accordingly, but I choose to let the mystery be. That was Iris DeMent singing the song, Let the Mystery Be. So we're going to take a break, and after the break, we're going to talk with the author, poet, and atheist essayist, Katha Pollitt, about the television series, Mrs. America.
It's about the defeat of the Equal Rights Amendment by the very religious Phyllis Schlafly, portrayed wonderfully by Kate Blanchett. Very fascinating show, fascinating cast. We're going to chew that over with Katha Pollitt and other news of the day. Katha, of course, is an honorary director of FFRF, as well as the nation's columnist subject to debate. We've been enjoying her columns for decades, and she always sounds so fresh.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
Hi, I'm Julia Sweeney, and I'm an atheist and former Catholic. I even wrote a play about it called Letting Go of God. Right now, Catholic bishops are using their considerable influence to deny women contraceptive rights. Please join the Freedom From Religion Foundation and help keep church and state separate. You can call 1-800-335-4021, that's 1-800-335-4021, or visit ffrf.org to stand up for true religious freedom.
Margaret Sanger's motto was, "No gods, no masters." This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. Welcome back. Katha Pollitt is an American poet, an essayist and critic, and an outspoken happy atheist. She's the author of essay collections, books of poetry. Her work focuses on political, social issues from a left-leaning perspective. She talks about racism, welfare reform, abortion, feminism, and poverty. And Katha Pollitt is an honorary board member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
And her books include Subject to Debate, Reasonable Creatures, Virginity or Death, Learning to Drive, that was made into a movie, The Mind-Body Problem, and Pro, Reclaiming Abortion Rights. Welcome back to Free Thought Radio, Katha.
Hi, Annie Laurie. Thanks for having me.
So we talked to you about a month ago. You were one of our first coronavirus quarantine guests. And how are you doing now?
Well, I'm doing fine. And so is my husband. We are now in Connecticut at our little beach cottage, and that's better.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like such a traitor leaving New York, but it is better to be in a place where there's a lot less of the virus. And they have old people's hours at the Stop and Shop from 6 to 7:30, so you can go. So you can drag yourself out of bed really early and go shopping, and so that's good too.
Well, I'm glad you're staying safe, and I would think that evacuating New York City would be good for the people who remain.
Well,
keep everybody safer.
Except that we were keeping a lot of restaurants going by ordering a lot of takeout. So,
well, we invited you back on specifically because we just adored one of your most recent columns that's called "Why Did the ERA Die? FX's Mrs. America Has Some Answers." And you wrote this piece about this series that takes on Phyllis Schlafly, who basically killed the ERA with her movement. And this is what this TV series was about. And so you've been gracious enough to agree to read your column.
Yeah, I'm happy to read it. So sit back, everybody. Here it is. She's a liar, a fearmonger, and a con artist, Bella Abzug says of Phyllis Schlafly, about two-thirds of the way into Mrs. America, FX's fascinating 9-part miniseries about Schlafly and the struggle over the Equal Rights Amendment. But worst of all, she's a goddamn feminist. She might be one of the most liberated women in America, says Bella Abzug. Indeed, Schlafly, a devout Catholic wife and mother of six, was a tireless, extremely well-connected right-wing ideologue who made a fabulous career out of telling women that their place was in the home. Unfortunately, she was very good at her job. From a newsletter and meetings held in her living room in Alton, Illinois, she forged the contemporary anti-feminist movement, which not only scuttled the ERA, which fell three states short of ratification in 1982, but also realigned both major political parties around support or hostility to women's rights. To a frightening extent, we are living in the world Schlafly made. Some of my feminist friends think Mrs. America is too sympathetic to Schlafly. I think that impression is largely due to Cate Blanchett's brilliant performance. She is so beautiful, you want to look at her forever, with a creamy softness lacking in photos of the real-life Schlafly. And she brings a humorous twinkle to Schlafly's steely self-control as well. Blanchett Schlafly is a bit like Becky Sharp in Vanity Fair. It's fun to watch her scheme her way to the top. There's something innately appealing, too, about her drive and pluck. I found myself almost siding with her. Don't let those Republican men put you down, Phyllis. Good for you going to law school at 50. And if feminists dismiss you as a kook, just show them how wrong they are. Never underestimate your enemies is one of the main political morals here. The feminist main characters, Gloria Steinem, played by Rose Byrne, Betty Friedan, played by Tracy Ullman, Brenda Feigenfastow by Ari Grainer, Bella Abzug by Margot Martindale, Jill Ruckelshaus by Elizabeth Banks, and Shirley Chisholm by Uzo Aduba, each get an episode, and it's painful to watch their exuberant confidence slowly fade as they belatedly realize that this woman they saw as a joke is outmaneuvering them. Steinem says she won't debate Schlafly because that would give her credibility, leaving it to the deeply unpleasant and irascible Friedan, I can never remember how it's pronounced, who loses her cool when they debate at Illinois State University and shouts, "I'd like to burn you at the stake." This really happened. But Friedan, who along with the racist fundamentalist Lottie Beth Hobbs, is the only character portrayed in a wholly negative light, down to her twisted face and wild gray hair, deserves a lot more credit than she gets here. Not only did she write The Feminine Mystique, one of the most important nonfiction books of the 20th century, but she was also prescient. Rachel Steyer, whose biography of Friedan is forthcoming, wrote me in an email, quote, "It took the National Organization for Women around 4 or 5 years to realize what was going on, and then it was too late." So it's easy to caricature Betty for her excesses, but the reality is that her Geiger counter knew who the enemy was. Friedan, says Steyer, understood clearly on that Schlafly had grassroots appeal. The others just don't seem to grasp that Schlafly represents actual women. The only time they seriously grapple with why conservative housewives fear the ERA is when Steinem says, "Revolutions are messy, people get left behind." But the consensus seems to be that that's just the way it is. Well, maybe so. Certainly nothing would bring around the hardcore evangelicals and racists Schlafly allied herself with to grow the movement. Almost 50 years later, those people are still here, voting for Donald Trump as God's instrument, just like King David. But anti-feminism claimed some women, whom feminists should have sought to persuade, too. Although, as Jane Mansbridge writes in Why We Lost the ERA, pro-ERA activists gave conflicting and confusing responses to anxieties about drafting women and unisex bathrooms, the real issue was not these things. It was that many women raised to be traditional homemakers, supported by their husbands and respected in their communities, found their pedestals knocked out from under them practically overnight. It was not irrational for them to think the ERA would mean they would lose out in divorce, which was rampant in the 1970s, even if the laws on alimony and child custody would protect them less than they believed. Nor were they wrong to believe that the status of homemaking was being drastically lowered, even as, for many of them, it was too late to choose a different path. The segments devoted to the women's movement raise issues that are still with us: pragmatism versus revolution, compromise versus purity, winning power inch by inch within the system versus raising your battle cry outside it. Bella Abzug is the practical politician. At the 1972 Democratic National Convention, she pushes Steinem to abandon Shirley Chisholm, who had no chance of winning the nomination, in hopes of gaining concessions on abortion rights from McGovern. Although Abzug supports lesbian rights, she has to be argued into fighting for them. Gloria Steinem is more of a risk-taker and an idealist. You're a dilettante who wanted to play politics, Abzug tells her during one of their numerous disagreements, but Steinem doesn't need to get elected or pass bills in Congress. Mrs. America plays deliciously with the unacknowledged common problem of both feminists and anti-feminists, men. Steinem is pornified in Screw magazine. Ruckelshaus, the lone Republican feminist portrayed, has to manage five kids and a house, while her husband, a genuinely nice guy, has more important things to do. The feminists are betrayed by George McGovern and then by Jimmy Carter. On the other side, Schlafly has to massage the ego of her husband, Fred Schlafly, a prominent right-wing lawyer who is not always happy that she's a star, even though he helps make her one. In one disturbing scene, he insists on sex when she is obviously exhausted. Her biographer, Donald Critchlow, protested that she had a great marriage. Fred worshipped her, and he would never have done such a thing. Phyllis Schlafly has to contend with patronizing and exploitative male politicians, too. Her original passion was for the very male field of foreign policy. Anti-feminism was the fallback. She wrote the hugely influential pro-Barry Goldwater book, A Choice, Not an Echo, but he doesn't mention her in his memoirs. She backs Ronald Reagan, but doesn't get the cabinet position she thinks he's promised her. The last shot of the series shows her aproned and sad, peeling apples at her kitchen table. If only that had been the real-life end of the Phyllis Schlafly story. On the feminist side, the movement took years to recover from the defeat of the ERA. The parting frames of Mrs. America tell us that almost four decades after the deadline, it's been ratified in Nevada, 2017, Illinois, 2018, and Virginia, 2020, for the required 38 states. Resurrection or empty gesture? The battle goes on.
Thank you for reading that. It's such a good column. I agreed with it so much. I enjoyed the series so much.
We've been watching it. Yeah, we did watch it.
Like Old Home Week, it was so fun to see all this, celebrated, really. And to do it from the perspective of the woman who killed the ERA, but it really promotes feminism, I think.
Yes. Oh, yes, I think it did. And I have to say that this was a particularly fun column for me to write because I got to watch television for work. You know, I sat there for 2 days and watched this, this endless series. And it was really fun. Also, if you knew any of the people involved, it was fun. Now, I should say, a lot of older feminists who were active at that time are not happy with it. Gloria Steinem really hated it. She said something in The Guardian about it. And other older feminists I know also feel it was too favorable to Phyllis Schlafly. And it also, it's a very simplified version of the politics of the time. I mean, it has to be, right, because it's a drama.
Yeah.
Can I just say one more thing? According to Phyllis Schlafly's biographer, she did not have a bomb shelter in her basement, But that's the way, in a drama, you quickly convey the extremity of her foreign policy views.
It was this running gag. Betty Friedan could never pronounce her name. Well, she had that terrible name, Phyllis Schlafly.
I know, it is a hard name. But, a lot of us have hard names, so.
We love to hate her in that day, that's for sure. And she certainly did a number on women's rights. But I thought it was really fun to see anything about that feminist history, that heyday, which we've never really returned to since the early 70s, when we were making so many strides and we were so close to, winning the ERA. When we come back, we want to talk just a little bit more about this show and what you think is going to happen with the ERA and then about some of your other columns that have been making some hay. We're talking with essayist and author Katha Pollitt. I'm Annie Laurie Gellar.
And I'm Dan Barker. We'll be back with more Free Thought Radio.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Steve Pinker. In my book, Enlightenment Now, I show that the world has become a better place as reason has been overcoming superstition and tribalism. But the values of the Enlightenment are under attack. That's why I'm a proud member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest association of free thinkers working to keep state and church separate. Please join me in supporting the Freedom From Religion Foundation to ensure that our government is driven not by religion, but by reason.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And we're continuing our conversation with Katha Paulett, the essayist, the poet, the author of many books, outspoken, friendly, happy atheist. So you were talking about the Mrs. America, the article you wrote about the FX series on TV, which we watched. And I wanted to say, Katha, that I think my favorite scene in that movie is when Bella Abzug confronts the female staff of Phyllis Schlafly, who are working really hard writing press releases and making phone calls. And she turns to them and she says, "Congratulations, you are working girls."
Yeah, well, that's always the central contradiction, isn't it, in the whole industry of telling women that they're better off staying at home, is that the people who say that, by definition, aren't staying at home. They're writers, they're political activists, sometimes they're politicians. So it was very funny, but also very true when she said that. But, you know, here's the thing. Right-wing movement dedicated to women staying in the home, it always needs women to be the enforcers of that. And that's true everywhere in the world. It always has been. Because women are a very important force in society, whether or not people want to acknowledge that. And it's very important. What women do is very, very important. And so you always need women to tell other women what to do.
Even if you're not staying home and you're telling them to stay home.
Exactly.
Of course, Phyllis Schlafly was a devout Roman Catholic, and one of the things they didn't get to in this series, of course they couldn't do everything, was the role of the Mormon Church. And for example, Sonia Johnson, who got excommunicated trying to expose the role of their lobbying against the ERA. But still, I thought it was really fun to watch that series. And the series was about the killing of basically the ERA, the killing of women's hopes on that. Do you want to talk a little bit about what the ERA would do? Would have done.
Well, you know, it's a funny thing because right in the beginning, Phyllis Schlafly says, you know, you don't need the ERA. It's already, women's equal rights are already guaranteed by the Fourth Amendment, of the 14th Amendment. And certain Supreme Court decisions establish that. So, you know, in a way, she's right. However, as we know, Supreme Court decisions can always be modified later. And the thing about the ERA was putting it in the Constitution would not only be very symbolic, since women, mm-hmm. the word woman is never mentioned in the Constitution, and in fact isn't mentioned in the ERA either. But you know
it's
what
not,
I mean.
Isn't it mentioned in the 19th Amendment?
No, it shall not be abridged by because of sex. So anyway, the point is that.
The point
that,
is that we need that protection.
I mean, that sort of really sets a kind of bottom line that you can't go back on. And so it would be important symbolically and maybe in real life, too, for that reason. But it is also true that this is so fascinating, the things that people were mobilized to fear about the ERA have all happened. For example,
yes.
Unisex
exactly.
bathrooms is now mm-hmm. under the, you know, because of trans is becoming more common.
Women in the military.
Women in the military, the protection, quote unquote, of homemakers in the case of divorce. That's gone. You know, so the things that they feared did happen. But they didn't happen because of the ERA. They happened because of a broader social change.
But we still don't have some of the protections of the ERA. So,
well, you know, it's there. One of the things that Jane Mansbridge talks about in her book was that, which is why we lost the ERA, which is I really recommend to everybody out there, is that because the movement was this sort of weird combination of top-down leadership in Washington and New York, but also passionate volunteers who could not be corralled by top-down leadership, they never really got the settled on a message about, well, okay, would it be women in the would there be women in the military? Would there be unisex bathrooms?
Yeah.
And what about abortion? Would abortion be guaranteed under the ERA? And there were ways around, legalistic ways around all of those things, but they never kind of really settled on it. And so that left people who were anxious about the ERA able to pin their fears to these, you know, three or four concrete things that would happen. Whereas I argue in my piece that the real anxieties were deeper and more diffuse.
But so three states now, the show leaves off that they were three states short, and then it points out that three states subsequently have actually ratified the ERA. But
just this year, Virginia was the third one.
Yeah,
right.
So we have 38 states, but of course we had a time limit in the constitutional language that was passed.
So it remains to be seen what happens with that, because there are also states that would like to rescind their approval of the ERA. So, you know, you could imagine they would say, well, look, if we're going to, you know, if we're going to start the clock again, if we're just opening everything all up, we want to take it back. And I think, you know, the thing that's really interesting to me is that at the time, at the deepest level, too many Americans were not comfortable with the idea of equality between men and women. And I think that's still true. I mean, look, Trump is president.
Right.
Patriarchal religions are extremely popular.
And we're still woefully imbalanced in Congress in terms of men and women. And, you know, it's, and most state legislatures, our country is behind a lot of even third world countries in terms of women represented in high places. We've never had a woman president. So we have a long way to go still.
We do have a long way to go, but I think eventually we'll get there. Do I think that? Did I say that?
Well, yeah, and I think that I would recommend that everybody watch Mrs. America. It's FX, and you can get it on Hulu, because I think it's still a really great feminist message, and it's so energetic, and I just love the opening sequence.
Well,
didn't
it's just
you?
Reliving the era,
yeah.
Too, the music and the clothing styles and all of that stuff. That was very well done.
We were so optimistic. Change was in the air. Well, thank you so much, Katha, for joining us, for writing that column, for being willing to read it so you can share it with our listeners. And we just look forward to your column every second week in the nation.
Now it's once a month. They cut me back.
Once a month.
Can you believe it?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
No. Well, that's kind of hard. But you stay so fresh. And
thank you.
Like our touchstone.
Thank you for saying that. And thank you for having me on the show, Annie, Laurie, and Dan. It's always wonderful to talk to you.
Well, it was a pleasure.
That was Katha Pollitt. Well, that's our show for today. We want to thank Buzz Kemper again, our producer and our engineer, recording at Audio for the Arts. We also want to thank listeners to the radio broadcast in Philadelphia, WOOM, in Madison, Wisconsin, to WIDE and WMUU, to WADR, Community Radio, in Janesville, Wisconsin, where my son and his family live, in College Station, Texas, KEOS, Columbia, Missouri, KOPN. Hello to listeners in Bellows Falls, Vermont, and New Hampshire, to WOOL, Black Sheep Radio, and to WRFI in Ithaca and Watkins Glen, New York. And, of course, most of you listen, many thousands of you listen to the podcast. So please give your podcast provider a thumbs up to our show. If you want to know more about Free Thought Radio, visit ffrf.org/radio.
Our congratulations again to all you graduating students. We're listening to Edward Elgar. And we want to invite you to ask for more information. Go to ffrf.org, support Free Thought Radio by becoming a member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and supporting our radio show, our TV show, our state church litigation, and our work to educate the public. Tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday.
Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The Quarantine Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The death toll from COVID-19 in the United States has passed 100,000, just 3 months after the U.S. recorded its first deaths from the novel coronavirus that emerged in China late last year. With just over 4% of the world's population, the United States has recorded roughly one-third of all coronavirus cases, averaging over 1,100 deaths per day since March. As bad as that figure is, a New York Times review of excess deaths suggests the true U.S. death toll is likely over 125,000. Throughout the month of February, as the coronavirus spread largely undetected through the United States, President Trump repeatedly downplayed the threat of the virus and claimed it was going to go away.
We have done an incredible job. Mm-hmm. We're going to continue. It's going to disappear. One day it's like a miracle.
On Wednesday, President Trump flew to Florida to watch NASA's planned launch of a new SpaceX spacecraft. The launch was aborted due to bad weather. Throughout the day, Trump made no mention of the grim milestone of 100,000 deaths. No written statement honoring those who have died, no condolences offered to families, not even a tweet acknowledging the six-figure death toll. In Minnesota, parts of Minneapolis erupted in flames Wednesday night as residents took to the streets for a second night to protest the death of George Floyd, a black man killed by police on Monday. A video circulated widely on social media earlier this week showing George Floyd gasping for air, telling officers, "I can't breathe," while a white officer named Derek Chauvin pinned him to the pavement with a knee on his neck. Three other officers stood nearby. All four officers have since been fired. The officers confronted Floyd after receiving a complaint. He tried using a counterfeit bill to buy groceries. On Wednesday, protesters held a day-long demonstration outside the city's 3rd Precinct Police Headquarters. Police fired tear gas, flashbang grenades, and projectiles in an attempt to disperse the crowd. Demonstrators also rallied outside the home of former officer Derek Chauvin. On Wednesday night, the city requested help from the National Guard as a number of buildings were set ablaze. Meanwhile, Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey has called on prosecutors to file criminal charges against Chauvin.
Why is the man who killed George Floyd not in jail? George Floyd deserves justice. His family deserves justice. The black community deserves justice. And our city deserves justice.
The Star Tribune reports Derek Chauvin was involved in multiple police shootings in his 19 years on the Minneapolis police force and was the subject of a dozen police conduct complaints. Protests over the killing of George Floyd have also erupted in other cities, including Los Angeles, where demonstrators temporarily blocked traffic on Highway 101. We'll go to Minneapolis after headlines. China's parliament has approved a new law that criminalizes any conduct in Hong Kong that harms national security and allows Chinese intelligence agencies to set up in the former British colony for the first time. Hundreds of Hong Kong protesters have been arrested in recent days opposing the law, as well as a separate bill making disrespect of the Chinese national anthem a crime. Earlier today, a group of Hong Kong protesters gathered at a shopping mall.
Eventually, after they passed the national security law, if there is really a national security agency established in Hong Kong, then what will happen to the protesters? Does our next generation in Hong Kong need to be accepted into re-education camps like those in Xinjiang?
The Trump administration strongly criticized the new Chinese law. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has told Congress the U.S. no longer views Hong Kong as fully autonomous from China, a move that may lead to Hong Kong losing its special economic status with the United States. In Washington, D.C., the House of Representatives held its first ever remote vote on Wednesday, with over 70 Democratic lawmakers casting floor votes by proxy as they stayed away from Capitol Hill in order to stop community spread of the coronavirus. House Republicans Tuesday filed a federal lawsuit seeking to block remote voting as unconstitutional, describing it as a partisan power grab by majority Democrats. Meanwhile, civil liberties groups are calling on Congress members to vote down a Patriot Act reauthorization bill that would allow the Justice Department and FBI to spy on the internet browser histories of U.S. residents. A similar bill passed the Senate last week by a single vote. In New York, scores of activists held a car caravan protest outside the notorious Sing Sing prison Wednesday, demanding Governor Andrew Cuomo immediately release prisoners at risk of COVID-19. At least four Sing Sing prisoners have died of the disease. Dozens more have tested positive. Elsewhere, protesters deposited effigies of body bags outside New York City Hall Wednesday to mourn the deaths of 78 unhoused New Yorkers during the pandemic. The protesters held signs reading, "Mayor de Blasio, there is blood on your hands." They're demanding the city open thousands of vacant hotel rooms to unhoused people to isolate and for an end to punitive sweeps against the homeless. A new study finds even mild cases of COVID-19 trigger people's immune systems to produce antibodies against the novel coronavirus. The findings by researchers at the Pasteur Institute in France raise hopes that most people who contract the coronavirus will have some form of immunity against a second infection. Meanwhile, researchers at the University of California, Santa Barbara say 6 feet of social distance might not be enough to stop the spread of the coronavirus, especially in cold and humid weather. The researchers found that under certain conditions, droplets carrying the virus can travel up to 20 feet after they're exhaled by infected people. The finding was published on a preprint server and has not yet been peer-reviewed. In southwestern Florida, there's been an explosion of coronavirus cases in Immokalee, with over 420 people testing positive. The rural community is home to some of Florida's largest populations of immigrant farm workers who've been deemed essential during the pandemic, but who often lack access to health care, paid sick leave, and other on-the-job protections. The aid group Doctors Without Borders is calling on Florida officials to aggressively ramp up testing and contact tracing for farm workers. In Brazil, police raided dozens of locations Wednesday linked to extremist right-wing activists propagating fake news online in support of far-right President Jair Bolsonaro. The raids came as part of an ongoing investigation into a fake news network that authorities believe is linked to the president's son, Carlos Bolsonaro. The raid came as Brazil's COVID-19 cases topped 410,000 with over 25,000 deaths. Brazil is now second to the United States for the most coronavirus infections in the world. In Argentina, security forces have sealed off one of the poorest neighborhoods in the outskirts of the capital, Buenos Aires, preventing people from entering or leaving after more than half of the slum's 300 residents tested positive for COVID-19 earlier the week. Local activists and some members of Argentina's leftist government condemned the move, saying it felt like the country was building ghettos for poor people. Argentina's slums are often overcrowded and lack proper sewerage or running water, making it nearly impossible for residents to isolate or maintain proper hygiene. In Peru, hospitals across the country are on the brink of collapse as coronavirus cases continue to surge, forcing some healthcare facilities to place patients in improvised tents outside.
Right now, we find ourselves in a collapsed reality. We don't have beds in the ICU. We don't have beds here in the Rosola Hospital. Patients are dying every day, and there are no results from authorities. So we're urgently asking for help for our personal protective equipment to arrive.
In Brussels, Belgium, the European Commission has unveiled a coronavirus aid package worth over $820 billion. The plan, which needs the unanimous support of all 27 European member nations, would speed investments in green industries like renewable energy as part of Europe's Green Deal initiative. Spain's begun 10 days of national mourning for victims of the coronavirus pandemic. So far, more than 27,000 people have died of COVID-19 in Spain. An international coalition of anti-war and human rights groups are calling on the U.S. Congress to block two pending weapon sales to the Philippines worth $2 billion, saying President Rodrigo Duterte has a legacy of human rights violations and that the weapons could be used to unleash violence on innocent Filipinos. In a letter to U.S. lawmakers, the coalition writes, quote, "What could help the Filipinos right now is aid for their under-resourced healthcare system and for programs to assist poor people to survive during the current lockdown, not an arms sale." This comes as Duterte has put the military in charge of the country's COVID-19 response. In early April, Duterte ordered troops to shoot dead anyone violating quarantine. And the legendary AIDS activist and playwright Larry Kramer has died at the age of 84. In 1983, he helped found the Gay Men's Health Crisis, the country's first AIDS organization. 4 years later, he helped form ACT UP, the AIDS Coalition to Unleash Power. The direct action group invaded the offices of drug companies and scientific labs, stormed St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York, covered the home of Senator Jesse Helms in a giant condom, and conducted many die-ins at the FDA, all in an attempt to force the country to address the AIDS epidemic. Larry Kramer also wrote many plays, including The Normal Heart. Last year, he addressed the Queer Liberation March in New York City.
Everyone gay I've known has been affected by this plague of AIDS. As it has since its beginning, this has continued to be my motivation for everything I've done. It's been a fight I've been proud of fighting.
We'll look at Larry Kramer's legacy later in the broadcast with the Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright Tony Kushner, journalist Ann Northrup, and Yale epidemiologist Greg Gonsalves. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The Quarantine Report. I'm Amy Goodman.